You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Good morning, and thank you to Susanna Duffy for Left After Breakfast. Also just had a fabulous chat with the wonderful Chloe and Jacob from Green Left. It's just gone 9 a.m. and you're now listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence. Today's show is brought to you from the stolen lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Kulin Nations. I acknowledge sovereignty was never ceded, and I acknowledge elders past, present and emerging, and extend that respects to any First Nations listeners tuning in today. This show supports First Nations people in their struggle for self-determination, land back and land rights, sovereignty, restitution, and treaty. And, yeah. Let's go.
Slums in some metropolitan centers are coming down, condemned by forward-looking civic governments. Down are coming the bad living conditions that produce bad citizens.
The practical uses of asbestos are very numerous. At least 18,000 articles are made of it.
In the spring, the nature-loving Australian goes bush. The wife washes and the dishes dry themselves.
Amy is a serial pest.
Cities within cities, scientifically planned and built, where a man and his family with a small income can live with comfort and dignity as investments in democracy.
That's right. Out of the rubbish tip and straight to your ears is me, Amy. And if you haven't worked out, this show is Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence. Listen back to Trans Day of Audibility 2026 here at 3CR. Fun fact, that song I made with the wonderful Tilda Joy of Slacker Radio and also the Vibe Consultant. She did the little electronic drums, the bass, and half the vocals. I was the guitar and the other vocals. And she did all the putting it together, and thanks to Karina for recording that. That's been the show song for since the beginning, and I still love it. Great meditation, I think. all right, so, oh boy. World leaders seem to be putting power and money over human lives, rights, and needs whilst we dive over the tipping point into catastrophic climate change. Are you ready? Do you have an alternative mode of transport to the shops and services? Do you own a trolley or a bike? Have you looked up your local council's emergency relief centres and food centres? Do you have connection to local community? What will you do if the trucks stop or the water runs out? Are you prepared? Good old Alvo wished us a happy Easter. He said, happy Easter and good luck with all those problems. Take another hit so the billionaires don't have to. As the bodies pile up across Lebanon, Iran, Palestine, and across the Swana region in Africa. On top of this, within 14 days, the US and Israel's war crimes in Iran has sent 5 million tons of CO2 into the atmosphere, adding to the USA's $10 trillion tab of climate destruction since 1990. Our personal sacrifices, like reusable cups and paper straws, in order to combat climate change, seem trifle in these times, and you may feel despair and like giving up. But we're in a fight where we have to mobilize enough people to exercise our people power. Our people can jam up the gears of war, environmental destruction, and social justice with very simple things. So get active, treat your end time blues with a good dose of revolutionary vigor. And this show looks at how we can do that in community. Often what's called the grassroots. Maybe you're defending a local endangered species, feeding or housing people, or creating and maintaining vital community spaces. Maybe you're organizing at your workplace. We can't control the megalomaniacs doing all this destruction, but we can do two things. One, build and support community infrastructure to help us survive when disaster strikes. Two, jam up those gears until we arrest power back into a more equitable and just system. So today's show is jam-packed, and we're going to learn about the Orbost Community Arts Centre. We love a community operation on this show. 3CR is a community operation. Hear a campaign update from Better Buses for the West, which we heard on the last episode, and a massive urban wasteland survival guide segment. So before we get to our first interview, I'm just going to play a little song while I call our guest. A little while ago, I met Ellie Ware, a local artist at an environmental festival, and they released a new EP this year called For I Only Live in My Skin. We're going to hear a track off that EP called Peaks Return. I'll be back with you after this.
You got me working like a dog, hanging on by a thread. They've got me singing my heart out, brick wall bouncing back at me. But I've got faith in Peaks Return. Thank you.
Live back again, 3CR Community Radio, and I believe I have Ruth from Orbost on the phone. Ruth, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Ruth. A friend of mine attended a writer's retreat at Orbost Community Arts Centre and came back raving about the operation. Maybe you could start by telling us about tell us about the operation and a bit about it, where it comes from. And, of course, a bit about yourself, if you like.
Yes, okay. Well, we're with the Orbost Arts Centre, and it's a community-built space. We had to build it ourselves because the Shire, you know, Orbost is a little town, sort of, and doesn't have all... it does have artists here. In fact, there are many artists here now. I think we were probably one of the more serious artistic exhibitions when we set up the Australian Wood Design Exhibition. And we did that for about 10 years out of Mechanics Hall here in Orbost. It was a really big success because we ran the wood design show because we're all TAFE students and we're trying to show our wares and... But I also was an active artist. I had my artwork in many galleries and exhibitions across Australia, really. And then I decided to... we actually lived in the bush out of Orbost. And then we were asked, well, why don't you do something in Orbost? And this is the history now, yeah.
Amazing. And so when did this happen? What year did this happen?
It was back in 1993, we did the Australian Wood Design Exhibition, and we ran that for about 10 years out of various halls. But part of that exhibition, we developed a national collection in wood design because we invited woodworkers from all over Australia to attend. And from that collection, that's why we figured we have to house it somewhere, because we just got to do that every year. And, yeah, and hence, we decided to try and build the Arts Centre. There was quite a lot of big community effort. Fundraised about $250,000, and we got in about $500,000 from the Victorian government when Mary Delahunty was the Minister for Arts back then, I think. And $500,000 from the federal government, and we had Peter McGorin helping us source 500 out of seats. And together we built the centre, and hence we've got this wonderful art space now.
Oh, that's amazing. And I hear you just had an exhibition. You were sending me some lovely photos, and I'll see if I can put some of the pieces up on the website after the show. Do you want to tell us a little about the recent exhibition?
Well, the recent exhibition was, we do it every 2 years now, just because it's so much work. And, but it was really good. It was well attended. The opening night was fantastic. Nearly all the entrants turned up from Wodonga, New South Wales, South Gippsland, Bairnsdale, from all over Lake Orbost. It was Cairn River. So we had a really good attendance, which is heartening for us. The judges came from one lady, her name was Jane Hussman. She came from Melbourne. She does her own furniture design business in Melbourne. And then we had a guy called Rob Manhell from South Gippsland in Bullock, and he's been teaching for 30 years. And then Ian Johnson, who's ornamental turner. So they were more than equipped to judge, and they did a really good job. So anyway, we had quite a few guitars. We had heaps of different carvings in. We had these beautiful trucks from Wodonga, which was intricately made. And
yeah, they looked amazing. I saw that, yeah. That photo, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite inspiring. People forget that wood is such a great resource in the sense that all you've got to do is strip it back and put it back through the thicknesser and planer or get the sander out and you've got something new to create with.
And there's so many ways you can get wood as well. Like a little while ago, I still think it's good to be a little bit cautious, but pallets are no longer or should no longer be treated with chemicals. So most wooden pallets now are just heat treated. And I've seen people do just what you just said, like sand back the wood from wood pallets and do woodwork projects out of it.
Yeah. Oh, pallets is a wonderful resource. And there is a lot of creative things. I use pellets all the time just for my sort of making garden fences or garden beds.
Oh, they're fantastic for that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's a renewable resource as well.
Oh, it's the best. Come on. I just didn't want the wood be. So we were mainly motivated to value add to our native hardwood timbers. And we were a little bit very focused on that in the beginning. Now, with the way it is and the bushfires, we're just happy that people create out of their wood, whatever species it is, and look after our trees. And, yeah, that's basically why we tried to encourage selective logging. But anyway, that's all past now. And we got burnt out for 225, of course, and that's a lot of the timber resource, and not long after that, the Green government closed the logging industry around us. So I think there's actually more interest in our town to create and add value to it in a more realistic and authentic way, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
And this year we had quite a few school students enter. We called it that award the Sapling Award. So we have 9 awards, well, actually 10 when you add in the People's Choice. So we always have People's Choice, and that's delivered at the end of the show. So we have the acquisition, which is what the judges choose to put in our collection. We have the best in furniture, the best in turning, the best in open. Open can handle anything from guitars to stomp boxes to boxes to sculpture, whatever anybody, model trucks, whatever anybody's really creating that doesn't fit in the turning furniture. And then we've got a reuse, reduce, recycle. that's the trucks in the town going around doing the Friday appeal. and then we have reuse, reduce, recycle, which is very popular. And, of course, wood just lends itself, but it can't be salvaged. It must be reclaimed. Once upon a time, a furniture step, once upon a time it could have been a set of stairs or wallboards or whatever, but that's very popular, and we always have a lot of interest in that.
Yeah. So you're really supporting local artists as well, from the sounds of things.
Oh, absolutely. Creativity is what creates inventors and leads to lots of good stuff for our society.
And
it's also therapy for those people doing it. Yeah.
And it can be hard. I've been also covering on this show neighbourhood houses because they're in a battle this year to get some much needed funding. They're looking at closing down some, and the turnout at State Parliament when I went there was just a lot of people from regional towns talking about how vital community spaces were, how it connects people, how it gives them somewhere to go and do things. Like, so how does Orbust help facilitate that in your area?
Well, that's very timely what you've just said then, because unfortunately we work well with the neighbourhood house in town and always have. They put our posters up, we put their posters up. But they've just closed because of lack of funding.
Yeah.
And because we have a wonderful space upstairs, which I call the upstairs of the art centre the sort of heart of the place, because it does so many functions. So, interesting enough, neighbourhood house classes and workshops are all coming to the art centre now.
Right.
And we're facilitating them at a very reasonable situation and their race. So we're just about to pick up the writers group, an art group, spinning group, a singing group, which is wonderful because it really adds more action and life to what we do, and that's music to my heart and is to be able to be in a position to help them out.
Yeah.
And then we also have an artist in residence who, so we have a lower gallery, we have, I'll just try and step you through the building. So it's sort of designer built with myself and a couple of other designers. It has ramps, and so it has three levels. So you come in the first level, which is ground floor, and that's all our shop area where we sell lots of artwork for our volunteers, sit on the desk, and they get a 20% commission for doing the desk work, and without them we wouldn't be as alive as we are. So that's a good place for people to come and buy local gifts, and we have many tourists come in as well. Then you, to the right of that, on the same level, but in the door a bit further, we have the National Collection, which is housed there, and that's our permanent. That's there all the time. So that's a good standby collection of beautiful things for people to check out they can't buy. And then they go past that and into the next, go down the steps a little bit, and down the ramp, and we have our exhibition gallery space where it gets used monthly or bi-monthly or, you know, 2 months at a time for different shows, such as this month, got the Australian Wood Design Exhibition on. Last month we had three artists who were from the town and they had their works up, and it was a beautiful show. And we also started a artist in residence program.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the artists was to the side doing her paintings, and now she's staying with us. And she'll be there for a bit longer now. And then upstairs you've got meetings, performance space, workshop space, mini community, you know, just whatever it gets used for. Oh, there's a dance girl that comes in after 4 to 6 and teaches dance to the young school kids in the town, and now adults, actually. Mm. She's just a breath of fresh air. I really like her energy. So it's... we're pretty active.
Amazing. And so...
as well, of course.
Oh, sorry, what was that?
And we also facilitated the Q Writers workshop and weekend there a couple of months ago, and I think that's where you guys got a handle on us, and hence we're on your radio station now.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about community infrastructure like this is that it has a resilience to it because the community wants it, values it, and cares for it. 3CR is quite the same. And, you know, when you talk about supporting all these local artists, 3CR has a policy to play 55% local music. And I think we're the only community radio station in Australia that actually plays that much Australian local music. But that's because we as a community who have community control can do that. Whereas the neighbourhood houses, as much as I love them, they are funded through the government of the day, basically. So I think there's an interesting parallel there that your community centre is able to stay open. And I just wanted to ask you, what does it take to maintain Orbost? What does it take to keep it going all these years?
Well, it's had its ups and downs, to be honest.
Hmm. As do all these places do, you know, it's to be expected.
Yeah. Well, it's also, you know, different people get on the committee and they have different ideas. And I was very involved because it was the woodworkers that actually did the interior, and we drove it and made the money happen. So we had to have proper architects and builders in at that stage. So it's come and gone. It worked very successfully for about 2009, I think, 2010, and then it had a bit of a hiatus for a few years. Sometimes it closed for a few years there because you didn't have the people that had as much connection with the community doing it. I don't know, whatever the reasons were, I don't really... can't tell you exactly. I had to have a bit of a break. I ran it for about 6 years and then had to have a bit of time out. But we had, we run on donations, so people come in the door and they actually donate, and we sell the artwork, so, and they're really well-priced artworks, they're not over the top, but they're quality, and there's such a variety, really. So we sort of managed to stay alive now because we've got a very active volunteer base. And some of them are work for the doll, I must admit. Without the work for the doll situation, we wouldn't have even had half the help. You know, we've had a lot of help with work for the doll. So those that are involved have to do that. They prefer to do it at our place because it's a pretty cool place to come and play. And, yeah, that's how we... We survive on the hearts of generous people, I suppose. Money is good too. We're still trying. We have had a little bit of money out of the East Gippsland Shire regarding to pay the administration person and one person to coordinate some of the bookings that we get. We're getting bookings all the time. So that's 10 hours for the booking person and 10 hours for the admin. So we're running on about 20 hours of support from the Shire. We actually really need that because the volunteers can keep it open, but if you ask them to do all the number crunching and balance the books, that'd be a harder task. And that's why... but the reason how we started the Art Centre was when we were in the process of building it, we realised that if we actually allow the builders to fit out the interior, we would have been left with a big bill at the end of it. We would have been in debt, right? So we could foresee that, and we said to the builders, look, we really need to, now you've got the show up and we can, we'll take over from now. And we all got together as woodworkers and artists and community members, and we fitted the interior out. We fitted it out in time with $40,000 left in the budget. So that $40,000, I used that to pay the first administrator in the back room, and hence his history from that. Yeah, pretty well.
Amazing.
Had that money left over, it would have been much harder start to spring from being open.
So we're about to come to the end of our little interview. Okay. How can people go visit Orbost? Where... maybe give people a bit of a geographical idea of where it is in Victoria. I'm actually not familiar with that part of Victoria myself.
Oh,
so
you've got to come, Amy. You've got to come and check us out. We actually have a music spot upstairs. I was going to say, we've got quite a lot of musicians in our town, and I'll be suggesting, I'll talk to you off air to find out who to send the Australian CDs to. I'm in a band myself now.
Oh, amazing.
I know, I'm really excited to get a bit of radio play in the city. So if you guys can help out,
we can.
Our Orbost musicians, we'll be very excited about that.
I think we can organise something.
Yeah, I know, I will. We're the Snowy Jammers, of course. It's the band I'm with, just to give my band a plug. There's quite a few bands in town. There's The Remedies, there's Stewie Box's Stone Nation, there's Short Long Way, there's Walking Wounded, there's another new band in town. But so we do Sunday sessions, I forgot to say that, once a month.
Oh, amazing.
But Orbost, upstairs. Orbost is actually on the Princess Highway. You've got to go off the Princess Highway and come into Orbost. It's really well worth it. Orbost is positioned on the east coast. It's probably one of the more pristine areas of Victoria, surrounded by beautiful forests. Not too far away from the sea. It's 20 minutes to Marlow, which is a very, has a lot of campers there at the moment. Cape Conran is very popular. The Marlow pub is exceptional. We have Sailor's Grave, which is a brewery just down the road from that. But Orbost itself is a quaint, gorgeous town with very lovely people. It has a lot of, and if it wasn't for the volunteers, Orbost would not have been as successful over the years. It does have a big heart, and I think that's why I stay, to be honest. I love the Orbost people who have get in and muck in and help out their community as much as they can.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's a good place to come check us out. We're just past Lake Central.
Mm-hmm.
So you go, it's actually 4 hours out of Melbourne.
Okay.
But well worth it.
Yeah.
You've got to stay and enjoy the area.
Yeah.
Trip off again. We have a lot of bike riders now. There's the Snowy River Rail Bridge is a huge bike riding contingency happening. Push bikes I'm referring to. And push bikes are a fantastic form of tourism for our town.
Hmm.
So, and I wish them all the best with their project to get the big bridge back across the Snowy River where people can ride on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big project for our town at the moment as well. There's lots going on.
Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah, definitely worth a trip out. We have to finish up now. But thanks so much for coming on the show.
No worries, Amy. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure.
Have a good Easter, everybody.
You too.
All right, enjoy your holiday.
Are you stressed about your home loan? Right now, more Victorians than ever are stressed about home loan repayments. If you're going through a period of temporary financial hardship, you can ask your lender for hardship assistance. Lenders can agree to reduce your interest rate, extend the term of your loan, freeze interest, put a temporary hold on payments, or reduce your payments. If you only own one property that you live in, and either you are affected by family violence or your household earnings are less than $75,000, contact Mortgage Stress Victoria for free help from a lawyer, social worker, or financial counsellor on 1800 572 292 or www.mortgagestress.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, where they were put in boxes and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and lawyers and business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martinis dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, where they are put in boxes and they come out all the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family in boxes made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
And we have another caller on the line. We have Elise from Sustainable Cities. Hey, Elise, are you there?
Good morning. I'm here. Hello.
Great to hear you. Great. Thank you for the card. I just found it this morning.
Oh, yay. You're welcome. Thank you so much for facilitating one of our small groups at the event. It was amazing.
Yeah, let's talk.
Wonderful job.
Let's jump straight into that. Let's talk about that event.
Yeah, sounds good. I just want to quickly say I'm calling in from Ngunnawal country up here in sunny Canberra and just pay a quick respect to elders past and present. Yeah, very lucky to be joining you from the National Folk Festival this morning. So just, yeah, wanted to acknowledge that.
Very jealous. So, yeah, what did we get up to on Sunday?
So last weekend we had a community symposium.
Oh, Saturday, wasn't it? Sorry.
Saturday, on Saturday 28th. Yeah, it was called The West Deserves the Best. So we held a public symposium bringing together like everyday people, local community groups, and some social service sector organisations to talk about how the underspending on public transport services and infrastructure is impacting communities, particularly in this cost of living crisis and now a fuel crisis. The timing was, yeah, on point.
Absolutely. And so I had a fabulous time there.
Good.
The panel discussion, I want to just briefly talk about that panel discussion that you had. I should have brought my recording devices with me because that, I think listeners would have loved that. But that was a really interesting discussion, particularly, I forget her name, but she was the person who came from that part of the West that had been disconnected almost entirely.
Yeah, was that Liliana?
Yes.
On the board of Aboriginal Wellness Foundation?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was amazing and, like, was really able to speak to, like, her personal experience growing up in the area and also, you know, being on the board of a service that functions out of a community centre that no one can really get to. The other board members were Melissa Hardham, the CEO of West Justice. She was also really amazing and, like, yeah, we've already got some plans brewing to do some more collaboration with that organisation.
She made great economic arguments for free public transport and how important it is for kids and kids who struggle with school, getting to school. If you don't have free public transport for kids, then, yeah, of course you're going to have the taxpayer is going to end up spending more money on court cases and all this stuff just because a kid can't get to school.
Well, yeah, I think the thing that really stuck with me was, like, that young people in the West are left with two options. Both are breaking the law. One is to catch the bus to school but not touch on because they can't afford it and then, you know, be able to go to school that day. Or touch on, take the bus, or just not go to school.
Yeah.
So... yeah, she made some really excellent points. And, yeah, they've done a lot of, like, really good work to get the free public transport for under 18s. But I guess, yeah, we were talking about how can we make sure that every young person in the West has access to this free transport. And now that, you know, we've got free public transport for the month of April, I think this conversation is even more relevant.
Because,
you know, there's so many people in the West that just aren't going to be able to make any use of this announcement, which is really great, and it was, you know, really awesome to see the Greens and Vic Farmers, like all these unlikely allies, get together to really push for this, and it's going to help so many people. But if you live in an area that doesn't have access to public transport, you're still stuck driving your car and spending $2.50 to $3 a litre on petrol, and God knows how much more expensive it's going to get.
So let's jump to the solution that Friends of the Earth Sustainable Cities is pushing, which is the grid system. Now, I was a facilitator for the community workshops, one of the community workshops, and we talked quite a lot about this. And there's a lot of, it was really great, a massive amount of the, like, migrant community turned up, really amazing conversations, very socialist, actually, like, just like the politics that were coming out of what people needed. But I mean that in sort of like a public infrastructure for public good kind of way.
Yeah.
And What I found interesting is how much eyes brightened when I explained the grid system. I drew on the whiteboard, and listeners, use your imagination here. Imagine your bus route. You've got to get from point A to point B, but your bus route is a weird squiggle that looks like spaghetti on a map. And it sort of goes in places that you're not quite sure why. The Friends of the Earth, what they're pushing is a grid system. So for the West, there would be a grid, which means that you don't have buses running in just parallel lines, also vertical lines, and that we want buses happening every 10 minutes on this system because people are okay to wait for a connecting bus, according to the data, for like 10 minutes. That's feasible for most people. But the biggest issue is that buses just don't go everywhere and they don't go to where people need to go in a quick enough way. But the grid system will likely resolve that and be more equitable. Equity was such a big conversation because you have, someone said that the buses are like the arteries of the city. Well, the West has whole limbs that have no blood because there are no buses, but a grid system would resolve this.
Yeah, that's such a good metaphor for what's happening out there. And can I say as well, like with the grid system, first of all, hashtag giddy for the gritty. It's a saying. Everyone starts saying it.
Giddy for the gritty.
Giddy for the gritty. But, you know, this is backed by, like, research. You know, the University of Melbourne did a paper, Better Buses for the West, where they actually did that mapping using their transport planning software. And they showed that this grid system is possible and it's very achievable in the near future. Like, that's why buses are the thing that we're pushing for rather than other forms of public transport, which obviously we do support as well. But buses are the, like, cheapest and quickest thing the government can do to ease cost of living pressures and get that lifeblood flowing into every part of the West and Victoria for, like, you know, to be honest. I don't know if you saw... Was it towards the end of last year or perhaps the year before, Chuanglu put a FOI in to get all of the papers out from the Department of Transport in regards to bus planning.
Mm.
And there were documents that show that the department has done planning for all of metropolitan Melbourne on a grid-based network. This work was done. They paid for that to happen. There was a plan in place and it was shot down by Premier and Cabinet last year. Simply because of a lack of political will. They don't think there's enough votes in buses. But I think, you know, we're seeing now
but
in the fuel
are.
Crisis that they're very wrong.
And we had data that 40% of the vote in the West was for a public transport policy, something to improve public transport.
Yeah, so in the Werribee by-election, 40% of the votes went to candidates who had backed Better Buses.
Amazing.
So you know, proof that people do care about this issue and it is something that's going to influence how they vote in the election.
I'm going to encourage people to listen back to our interview from the other week. But before we have to finish up now, but did you want to quickly give a few places where people can learn more and follow?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our Instagram is absolutely going off at the moment, so please jump in there, watch our last reels, interact with them. They're all, really current at the moment. Commentary on Albo's non-announcement yesterday or the day before. At @_buses. We also have a section on the Faux Melbourne website. So that's melbournefaux.org.au/transport. You can read much more about our work there. And if you want to read that article by the University of Melbourne, just look up Better Buses for Melbourne's West, UniMelb, and you'll see, you can read the research for yourself. But yeah, keep an eye on our socials. And if you're interested in coming to our collective meetings, we have them every Wednesday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Faux office and online. And those will be coming out West later in the year as well. So yeah, please get involved. We need all the power we can get at the moment.
Thanks so much, Elise, and thanks so much for giving us that update. Enjoy the music festival.
Thank you. Will do. See ya.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Welcome back. You're listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence on 3CR Community Radio. And let's see if I can get this working for a minute. There we go. Okay. Underneath me right now is Matilda Merle's Four Tales, which is relating to what we're about to do now, which is an Urban Wasteland Survival Guide segment. Urban Wasteland Survival Guide is basically my little segment where I share some ways where you can survive it out there in the urban wastes. I chose this track to go underneath us today because it combines the sound and architecture of water and the city. Very much the vibe of this show. And the theme of today's show is ways that you can save water. So, well, have you seen the latest United Nations report on global water bankruptcy? And I will leave links to it in the show notes for today, you'll find that the lakes and rivers around the world, particularly in the global south, are drying up. And you've probably seen that the United States is specifically targeting Iran's salt water desalination plants, as Iran has mostly dried up most of its inland water resources. So it is becoming a critical and existential issue around the world. In fact, around 4 billion people experience severe water scarcity for at least 1 month of the year. 4 billion. That's half the population of the planet. The major cities of Oz are managing so far to get water to you, but they are relying more and more on desalination, extractivist practices that will dry out the dams and the rivers we depend on. While some effort is being made to recycle the water we use, the truth is that you have the money, that if you, and by you I mean if you are a billionaire, have the money to buy water as you can for mining or AI data centers or for cotton farms for some reason, the government will happily let you do it without kicking up much of a fuss. Furthermore, laws and regulations on climate-sensitive housing are a joke, with property developers building houses that only worsen the issue and put greater pressure on our precious water supplies. So while we should fight to change this, we are heading into a future where you may be without water. We have crossed that tipping point in climate change. Who knows what's going to happen? And we saw with COVID crisis that Australian government does not have adequate crisis measures in place to help with these crises that emerge. We did not respond as well as countries like Laos or Vietnam, who were able to respond very well and very quickly during COVID, not just because they had governments that were prepared for these kinds of emergencies, but because they have incredible community infrastructure in those countries as well, which is encouraged by their governments. Our government, on the other hand, seems to work for billionaires. It seems to really be the case with our situation these days. So what are we going to do about it? Well, we can lobby, but we also need to survive. So there are some ways. I'm going to teach you some things today that you can use in your garden to help save water, and how these potentially combined with other things could be used to store and collect water to save in a crisis situation. However, I'm not going to give you all the facts on how to store and save, collect and purify water, because I don't want to get sued if you get a serious illness, and you don't need to right now. We have clean, perfectly good drinking water coming out of your taps. So please follow EPA guidelines around handling septic and your local laws around handling any septic or grey water. In general, and generally speaking, I tell my advice to you, never handle grey water or septic water, especially septic water. They can make you extremely sick. So be very careful, follow laws and regulations. So what are some ways that you can store water? Well, if you're a renter like me, you don't have any autonomy as to whether your home has rain or grey water tanks. So you're going to need containers and buckets. You can buy food safe containers online or at scrap yards and salvage shops such as at Tips. I like olive barrels. These are the barrels that olives are transported to en masse before they get jarred here in Australia. They are food safe containers. I bought three of them. They are 220 litres each. I bought three of them for $10 off an online marketplace. They are large enough to contain a significant volume of water. And they have these really handy lids. So the lid's in two parts. One part is a ring and the other part is like the actual lid. So the lid goes on, and then the way to get it secure and airtight is this ring that tightens it into place. And that ring is like a lid, but with a big hole in it. So I use that ring with a piece of fabric draped across the hole. And I, instead of using that ring to lock in the lid, I lock in some fabric. And I stick it underneath my overflowing gutters. And I have endless amounts of rainwater. Last year, I had two olive barrels sitting underneath my gutter. And I had 440 litres of water from that, just constantly overflowing from those rain barrels. The reason I put that little fabric, by the way, is to keep out large chunks of dirt. That is not water that you can drink. That is not water that is safe for you to consume. And please be mindful of a couple of things. Be mindful if your roof is rusty and has because heavy metals, particularly chromium, will leach out into that water. And you might not want to put that where you're growing food. Try and suss out any chemicals or paint that have been used on your roof. Hopefully your rental agent or landlord has a history. There are some serious nasties that can potentially be up there, particularly lead paint. Urban rainwater will always contain some amount of pollutants. You can track air quality and water quality via the Bureau of Meteorology or your local state environmental protection agency. So my last tip to you is to get some food safe buckets for collecting water. Because I also like to use buckets to collect and some of the water that happens in my kitchen, for example. Some other food safe containers can be jerry cans, although these do have an expiry date as they are made of plastic, water bottles and cooler containers. Again, they will eventually become unsafe and leak PFAS into the water. Glassware can be a great food safe method as long as you don't break it. And there are also ceramic pots you can store water in, but they are extremely heavy and hard to move around. Now, if you're in an emergency situation, storing rainwater for purification and drinking, then I recommend getting yourself an off-grid living or a prepper book.
Prepper, as in the people who live in holes in the ground when the apocalypse comes, with many, many, many tins of beans. Now, while I may not agree with them politically on a lot of issues, they do have some incredibly well-researched and thorough books on things like water purification and storing and really practical ways. And they are thoroughly researched. I just wouldn't take any of their advice on 5G or anything like that. But anyway, you can download a whole bunch of these off annasarchive.org. Whatever dot it is at the moment, they sort of jump around their URL at the moment. The best thing to do is to go to Wikipedia and you'll find links to Anna's archive there. Basically, drinking water requires maintenance. It can become unhealthy and unsafe. It can go flat, be deoxygenated, and that's why I encourage you to get well resourced, get a book, and just keep it around, maybe for that emergency day, that one crisis day that hopefully never comes to any of us. I also like to collect water in my kitchen by sticking a bucket in the sink. And yeah, and you can also throw hot boiling water onto weeds you don't like to kill them. Just be mindful if there's salt in that boiling water, that salt stays in the ground and makes it hard for plants to grow. So maybe save it for spots like cracks in the concrete where you don't want weeds to grow. Some weeds will come back, but if you consistently keep pouring hot water on them, eventually they give up and die. Even dandelions, but it is a persistent effort. I'm going to have to make this a part one of Urban Wasteland Survival Guide because I've run out of time. Had a jam-packed show and I hope you really enjoyed it. We're going to go to another song by Ellie Ware, who we heard earlier in the episode, and we're going to hear Shadow. Stay tuned for Think Again and... yeah, please follow this show at 3cr.org.au/killyourlawn. See you in a fortnight's time.
Let it bloom, heartaches. Let it move, whatever it takes. Let it love, what it may. Little river, river flow.
the river go. Sing the cap, it's on show. Light your candle, cast your shadow. Let it bloom. Dark shapes. Let it bloom. Heartaches. Let it move. Let it flow, what it may. Little river, river flow. Little river, river go. Sing with care. Light your candle, cast your shadow.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.